Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Individualized Education Plans Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On March 22, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Andrew F. v. Douglas County School District, a dispute involving the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, which, in exchange for federal funding, requires that states provide a free, appropriate public education, FAPE, to disabled children by means of a Tailored Individualized Education Program, IEP. In its 1982 decision, Board of Education of Hendrick Hudson Central School District, Westchester County, v. Rowley, referred to as Rowley, the Supreme Court indicated that the FAPE requirement is satisfied when an IEP is reasonably calculated to enable the disabled child to receive educational benefits. Andrew F. is a student with autism who received annual IEPs from the Douglas County School District from preschool through the fourth grade. At that point, however, his parents felt his progress to be stagnating, and when the school district proposed a similar IEP for the fifth grade, Andrew's parents moved him to a specialized private school where he made significant progress. School district officials thereafter presented Andrew's parents with a revised IEP, but the parents considered it little better than the previous version. The parents sought reimbursements of private school tuition costs by filing an IDEA complaint with the Colorado Department of Education. Their claim was denied, however, and the denial was affirmed by both the District Federal Court and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Tenth Circuit. The Tenth Circuit concluded that under Rowley, the FAPE requirement was satisfied so long as the IEP conferred more than a minimal educational benefit. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the Tenth Circuit and remanded the case. Writing for a unanimous court, Chief Justice Roberts indicated that to meet its substantive obligation under the IDEA, a school must offer an IEP reasonably calculated to enable a child to make progress appropriate in light of the child's circumstances, a more demanding standard than the Tenth Circuit's de minimis one. The court then remanded the case for further proceedings under the corrected standard. And now, to discuss the case, we have Daniel Woodring, principal at Woodring Law Firm.
This decision of the United States Supreme Court was a unanimous decision, with Justice Roberts authoring the opinion, and of course, the court had 8 members at the time this opinion was issued. This is an important decision. It's probably been, as the court noted, 35 years since they last addressed the question of when handicapped children are receiving sufficient educational benefits to satisfy the requirement of the Act. Now, of course, the act they're referring to is the Individual with Disabilities Educational Act, otherwise known as IDEA, and we'll refer to it as IDEA throughout the discussion of this case. A little bit of background on the case. Andrew is a child in Colorado, and he had been diagnosed with autism when he was 2 years old. His parents had placed him in the local Douglas County school system, and he'd been in that system for 4 or 5 years. He had an IEP. And pretty much for those 4 or 5 years, the goals in his IEP did not change much. The parents were not satisfied with the progress he was making, both academically, because they thought it was minimal, and on the behavior side as well. So the parents went ahead and removed him from the district and placed him in a private school that specialized in treating students with autism. Based on the record, the court says that he made significant progress in that private school, both behaviorally and academically, in the course of just a few months. The parents then came back and talked with the Douglas County School District again about placing him there, and the district provided an IEP that they proposed that really did not differ much from the IEPs he had been under when he was not making progress. So the parents then argued that they should be entitled to the tuition for the private school in which they had placed him, since the district was not providing FAPE, a free appropriate public education. The district court affirmed the school district, finding that while there had not been a lot of progress by the child when he had the district IEP, there was at least, quote unquote, minimal progress. The case was then appealed to the 10th Circuit, and at the 10th Circuit, the court noted that it had long interpreted this language to mean that a child's IEP is adequate as long as it is calculated to confer an educational benefit that is merely more than de minimis. So there's the standard then that was being advocated in this case, merely more than de minimis. And there are, other than the 10th Circuit, there are other districts that have standards that are close to that. Some had standards that seem to be higher. None of these standards are bright lines, though, because they're all subject to interpretation, and one could argue there's a subjective quality to these. Now, going back to the case 35 years ago that initially established many of these standards, Rowley had said that you have to have standards that are reasonably calculated to enable him to make some progress, an IEP reasonably calculated to enable him to make some progress. However, Rowley admitted that the determination of when handicapped children are receiving sufficient educational benefits presents a difficult problem. Of course, that's the question the court was addressing today. Of note in Andrew is that the court did not adopt the requested standard by the parents. Basically, they had requested a standard of equality such that a child would have an equal opportunity as other children to make academic progress. That was similar to a request that had been made in the Rowley case, and in fact, the rationale of one of the lower courts in the Rowley case. And this time, the Supreme Court said, no, we're again not going there. They actually noted that, of course, they had denied to do that 35 years ago, and Congress had not changed that standard in the time since then. So I think they used that as evidence. It wasn't up to the court to make that kind of a change in the standard. However, they did define a standard and said the standard is going to be whether a school offers an IEP reasonably calculated to enable a child to make progress appropriate in light of the child's circumstances. And then they went on to say that, you know, for a child that's integrated into the regular classroom, which is the preference when a child has an IEP, the standard should be reasonably calculated to enable the child to achieve passing marks and advance from grade to grade. As a side note, they did drop a footnote and say that just because a child is advancing from grade to grade and making passing marks does not necessarily mean the child is receiving FAPE. So that's something that's interesting in a small subset of cases to know that your child might be entitled to more, that while that's a reasonable standard, there could be a higher standard in that scenario. And they said, of course, when you have a child who's not fully integrated, then you're looking at something where the standard would be that, you know, is the educational program appropriately ambitious in light of his circumstances? Every child should have the chance to meet challenging objectives. So they said, we're setting a new standard, and commenting on the merely more than de minimis, they said the new standard would be markedly more demanding than the merely more than de minimis standard. The standard would require an educational program reasonably calculated to enable a child to make appropriate progress in light of the child's circumstances. So before we get to what's significant about this case, there are two other things to point out about the case. They said that, you know, this is not a bright line rule, which it's clear it's not. But they said that should not be an invitation for courts to substitute their own judgment for the educational judgment of the schools and the people that worked on the IEP. However, they pushed back a little bit and said that a reviewing court may fairly expect those authorities to be able to offer a cogent and responsive explanation for their decisions that shows the IEP is reasonably calculated to enable the child to make progress appropriate in light of his circumstances. So there's going to have to be some reasoning and explanation given if a court's going to defer to the authorities making an appropriate decision based on this standard. Doing a short wrap up and looking at what's significant about this case. First, this is definitely a higher standard than the merely more than de minimis standard. How much higher? Again, these are the type of cases that are worked out, individual facts and circumstances, a lot of districts across the country. We're not really going to know what that standard means, how courts are going to break on that for a number of years. And in fact, it may require a further trip to U.S. Supreme Court on this. There are some states, if you're in a state that had a merely more than de minimis standard, be a state within the 10th Circuit, there are a few other circuits with that standard or a similar standard as well. Clearly, any decision that was predicated in that state on a, you know, merely more than de minimis is going to be subject to review and revisiting. So that's something to be aware of. One other thing to think about when you're looking at this is that the court again stressed that academic progress is very important. So they're looking for an IEP that shows academic progress. They say it's, you know, if you're not in a general population, it may not be moving from grade to grade, but they're looking for more than minimal academic progress. I think when you look at what happened in this case, one thing to keep in mind is that evidence of ability to make progress is important. I think it may have been critical for this case that Andrew had not made progress for 4 or 5 years in the public system. And there could have been an argument made that, well, we're doing what we have to do and he's still not making progress. But because the parents had placed him in a private school where he did make significant progress within the course of a year, they had evidence that they could use to show that what the district was doing was not reasonable, because if he had to make more than minimal progress, what they were doing was not calculated to lead to that. So that's an evidentiary question that practitioners may want to think about in these cases. As we've already said, this is not a bright line case, so there will definitely be more litigation for a period because there are no bright lines. It's going to be difficult without a bright line for schools to know exactly where the standard is, and advocates are likely to push because they're hopeful that courts will set a standard that gives greater benefits, more rigor, perhaps more services in an IEP than previously, and this gives an opportunity to push on that. One other practical matter to think about from this case is that the court pointed out that the IEP in this case that was insufficient basically had the same goals and objectives year over year. So when IEPs are being drafted and put together, I think that's one thing that will have to be considered, is whether you're making a change. Obviously, the hope would be that it's progress to a higher level for the goals in an IEP year over year. And if there's not a change, I think that's going to trigger a further review of that situation. Again, just as a final note, this is an interpretation not of a constitutional provision, but of a statutory, a congressional act. So to the extent Congress wants to address this, if they're not comfortable with this decision, I suspect they're very comfortable with a higher standard. That is always a possibility whenever you have a statutory interpretation instead of a constitutional case.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUS Cast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.